Your inner geek wants to come out and play, but where to go? Join Vernon Wells, the ultimate club where you and your fellow geeks can hang out, play games, and just nerd out 24/7. Whether you love RPGs, video games, or are just a major fan of sci-fi and geek culture, Vernon Wells has something for everyone. Let your geek flag fly at Vernon Wells. Sign up today and see for yourself. VNW.club. That's VNW.club.
Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hi there.
We got the show's namesake. He's back. It's BJ Shea.
This looks familiar, but where am I?
Oh, no. And running the boards is Joey Dees.
Hi.
Hello. On today's show, we will get some movie news from Gareth von Kallenbach. We will talk television with BJ's review of Picard, the first episode. No spoilers for the second one.
We won't do it. And Joey Dees will help.
Oh, hooray. Nice. And then we will talk Doctor Who and how Doctor Who is making history. And, of course, the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com. It's going to have our blogs, podcasts.
You know you're doing.
Blogcast. But just find us with BJ Shea's Geek Nation, BJ Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, radio.com, and iTunes. Facebook is back, baby.
Yeah.
It took a while, but we got it back.
You know, some technical difficulties, but we got it.
Really? Someday we'll tell you the story. It's actually a problem that only successful people have, so it's kind of nice.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we had a successful people problem. Thank you for making us successful.
I'm successful.
And one way to make us successful, actually, is to leave us a rating. Do that on whichever podcatcher you use, if it's Apple Podcast or Stitcher. Any of those. Give us a 5-star review. Give us some words. Take a screenshot of that. Shoot us an email. Let me know what's going on. And you know what? I'll send you a comic book. And in that comic book will be a little placard that says BJ Shea's Geek Nation, and it has all of our signatures.
Nice.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
Yeah. So leave a review anywhere that you can leave reviews. And I think radio.com, also the app, you are able to get our podcast too.
Yeah. So it's a great way to do that and give us some props, make us feel better about ourselves. And I mean, I'm not above bribing people.
I like that plan.
Let's talk with Mr. Gareth von Kallenbach from Skewed and Reviewed. He's got a ton of movie news out there. And man, I guess it's just reboot season. Gareth von Kallenbach joins us, and like I always say, you can get more information at Skewed and Reviewed. Search for it on Google because it's really easy, but you can go to the website, sknr.net. Gareth, now, reboots have always been a Hollywood thing, and now they're more than ever, but it looks like we're going to possibly get a reboot of the thing, but with a twist, right?
Yes, and this is a very interesting one. I'm a big fan of the series, and I was one that actually didn't mind the prequel that shared the same title of it, but that underperformed at the box office. A lot of people thought, okay, this is it for the franchise. And what has happened is Blumhouse, as you may know, they're behind so many horror films these days producing them, decided to go back. And what they did was, a lot of people will know that the original thing was based on a 1930s short story called Who Goes There? And that became the film in 1951, The Thing from Another World, where it was essentially like a giant carrot, which became John Carpenter's The Thing and then became the reboot. Well, what has apparently happened was there has been a full-length story discovered that they thought had been lost. It basically showed up. It's a new take on the 1930s novella. And so what has happened is they've decided to take this original, never-before-seen thing they found, full-length novel, and it's called Frozen Hell. Ooh. And they've decided what they're going to do is apparently they're fast-tracking it. People are posting saying deals are done, money has changed hands. And apparently they want to adapt this never-before-seen novella, which will also which will also pay homage to the John Carpenter films as well as the one that went before it. So essentially, it's an original source material that has been expanded and is going to incorporate elements of the others, but I'm told it is essentially a reboot. It is not going to be a sequel, but the idea will be the same: creature on the loose, Antarctica, people stranded, and we'll go from there.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of kind of that adjacent sequel that would be like the Cloverfield series.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to look at it. It's, I think my guess is they probably will go from the beginning with them finding the creature in the ice and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But I think once it gets loose, you will start to see nods to the other films. And that'd be very interesting to see, because I know with the reboot, the prequel, one of the biggest arguments that they had was some people were in the camp of CGI, some people wanted practical effects like they used in the first film, and in some cases they tried to combine the two of them, and that kind of divided fans. They're like, I don't like that. And it's like, look, you know, it's a new world. We have options
right?
available to us now that weren't available in 82, and truthfully, I think you'd be silly not to at least consider using the CGI options, because think how many ways you can twist and mutate that thing.
Oh gosh, yeah, right.
You know, digitally.
Yeah, so I'm actually pretty excited for that. I'd love to see how they're going to do that. Now, one that I know that Vicky is super excited about, but has been languishing in development hell for so long, pun intended on that one, is The Crow. What's the news coming out now, man?
All right, so here's how this tangled mess has happened. Originally, Bradley Cooper was going to be in it. That fell apart. And they've gone everywhere from Jack Houston to Luke Evans. They even had Jason Momoa attached at one time. And they thought that it was actually, that was, of all the concepts, that was the one that apparently got closest to, happening before it all fell apart. Now, supposedly, the company that had a deal in place to finance and distribute it are involved, but they said, you know, Momoa, Tom Hardy, all these people are not going to be in it. And what they're going to do is they're going to try a more direct adaptation of the 1989 comic that they based the original Brandon Lee film around. Now, so at this point, we don't have a name attached to it. All we have is the production company saying, we're moving forward on this, or at least we intend to move forward. And it'll be interesting to see if it happens, because as you know, this has been a really interesting franchise. You had the first film with all the, you know, sadness and controversy around it. I think the follow-ups that came, everybody could agree, just were not in the same category.
Yeah,
the last two were all pretty much straight to video, and the Edward Furlong was out of theaters in, I think, 2 days and on video a week later. And so I think you're seeing a case of they want to do it right. They're not rushing it. But at the same time, you get to a point where if you don't move on it, you're basically just wasting time. And, you know, a lot of these deals, they have to get things in production by a certain date and so on and so forth. So it'd be very interesting to see if they can actually get this thing done.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just, I mean, the 90s were almost 30 years ago. So maybe it's just past its prime. I'm not going to tell Vicky that, so we're not going to worry about that. Moving on from that, though, Birds of Prey comes out this year. But there's already talk about sequel, man. What's up?
Correct. And now, of course, I always tell people not to be a wet blanket, but remember, this is DC, this is Warner Brothers, and we had all these Justice League sequels planned, and we had all these Aquaman sequels planned. Now, I still think we may see one of those, but, or two of those, but, you know, only Wonder Woman has made it the sequel route. They're rebooting Batman again. We don't know what's going on with Superman, so I always say, take this with a grain of salt. They are apparently talking that should Birds of Prey find an audience and be successful, that a potential sequel would have Poison Ivy appearing in it.
And that would make sense, because if you remember the Batman the Animated Series, Harley Quinn, who was originally a character who debuted there, was a fast friend of Poison Ivy, and they had done a lot of stuff, even in the comic books, with both of them. So it would stand to make some sort of sense.
Yeah, exactly. And see, and that's the thing. They're sitting there, they being Warner Brothers, they being DC, with this huge list of characters, and they haven't always found the right way to bring them forward.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of the aisle, here's Marvel, who are able to take some of the most obscure characters they have and have cinematic gold with them.
Yeah, right.
And so they're sitting here going, all right, you know, we've heard what Marvel's got coming, and then there are all these rumors about what's following it. Maybe we need to, you know, when we get a hit, instead of putting all this resources into, oh, let's develop this one, let's develop this one, kind of like they did with Wonder Woman. They didn't mess around. They said, this worked. Let's bring the director back. Let's bring the people back. Let's move on this rather than trying to reinvent the wheel.
Totally. I'm very excited to see what they're going to be doing with this movie anyway, because I'm interested to see what Birds of Prey are going to be able to do, because I was a real big fan of them in the 90s, going back to the 90s, watching it on the animated series, so we'll have to see with that. And then finally, we've got some Fast and Furious news that is actually very poignant for today.
Yes, so we have the big game this weekend, and there's going to be some theatrical trailers. Now, I've been told not as many as you might expect during the movie due to the $5.6 million price tag. So you're having some do pregame stuff, and then you have some doing these very clever things. And what you have is Universal has got a concert that's going on. Apparently, they may stream it and that sort of thing. Ooh. But the trailer is set to drop at 1 p.m. Pacific time today, and it will be, obviously, it'll be some kind of teaser trailer moving forward into a larger trailer that will come later. But they're going all out for it, and so this is a big thing they've said. There's a 50-second trailer tease available now, so people are expecting a more full-size trailer to come with it later this afternoon. So that's where we're at. And they've already, as far as we understand it, they've already planned a 10th film. And Whoa. Beyond that, we don't know what's happening. So, you know, they're very optimistic about this. We've been hearing stories that, you know, Cats and Doolittle have not performed well at the box office and could be having huge losses. And yet Universal doesn't care because they say we've got Fast 9 and Minions 3 coming, and those are going to be huge hits and will offset anything we've got. So a lot of confidence in this one.
Yeah, I can't imagine that it's going to be any sort of anything less than a box office blockbuster. And I know that if you guys are listening to this late, you can head over to sknr.net, hit up all of the social media for Skewed and Reviewed, because you'll have that trailer there, and also more information about comic books, video games, TV shows, movies, and so much more. Thank you so much, Gareth.
Anytime. Take care.
Thank you so much, Gareth. Again, Gareth von Kallenbach at Skewed and Reviewed. That is sknr.net. Now, let's talk about Picard.
Dun, 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 dun.
Now, one of the things I've noticed, now, episode 2 is out already, but we're not going to be talking about that, like I said.
We'll talk about it next Friday, #1.
#1.
Somewhere getting there on that one there. Yeah. But yeah, we usually wait a week on everything. And you did, BJ. You weren't here last week.
No, I wasn't.
But you did see the first episode.
Yes, we were all very excited for it. Joey Deese, of course, he and I have been watching Star Trek ever since he was a wee boy.
Aww. I was a tiny lass.
Yeah, aww. Next Gen, Deep Sleep Nine, the whole thing, you know, all that good stuff. And so we watched Discovery together, which the third season probably will debut very shortly after Picard is done. But yeah, we were all excited, like, okay, Patrick Stewart's in. He's like, I think there are stories to tell. There's a brand new way we can go with this. And we saw what they did in Remembrance, which is an interesting storyline that actually harkens back to season one of Star Trek The Next Generation. I do appreciate that.
How so?
Well, what do you say? Joey, did you get... Oh, actually, I had to remind Joey because he didn't quite make the connection, and I had to go online, and I've been watching a lot of Easter egg-y things that are out there on YouTube, and there's some great Easter eggs. It shows you all the stuff you may have missed that harken back to the old series. But the idea is simple, is that synthetics, which is what Commander Data was, a synthetic being, mm-hmm. have been banned because they went crazy and destroyed the Utopia ship yards on Mars.
Oh, they went all Terminator.
Yeah, they did.
And these aren't the emotional synthetics, because Data was special because he was like a very updated model, because I forget his name, Markox?
Oh, Sun Yang Yun. So Dr. Sun, actually, yes. I forget his full name. He's the guy that created the good one.
Yeah, he gets exiled and goes to a different planet. And that's
Dr. Maddox. That's who you're talking about.
No, same thing. Yeah. Sunya also, because he went crazy and wanted to do his own thing.
He went his own way.
Yeah, and he went to a different planet, and they have a whole story arc in Next Gen about that.
Yes.
But so the ones that revolt are a much lesser model, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. And like this, Generation One sort of thing.
This happens, by the way, pretty much after Romulus explodes. And if you remember, Romulus explodes, which is why Spock was trying to figure it out. He gets thrown back in time and we create the J.J. Abrams universe.
Okay.
But Romulus is still gone. I mean, if you remember Nero, he went back in time and went after Spock because he wanted to make him pay, and that created a whole new timeline.
And last week, we were trying to figure out, I forgot that Romulus exploded in the Prime universe.
Yeah, so Romulus is gone in the time of...
Wow.
In the time after, basically, Nemesis. So Star Trek Nemesis, when Data's dead, shortly after that... That last movie, that is when Romulus explodes, and then all the JJ stuff happens. We are now picking up, what is it, 20 years
after? About that, yeah.
20 years after, basically, the time of Nero going back in time and Romulus exploding.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and I think the whole thing starts off with Picard's retired because he's pissed off that the Federation didn't help the Romulans out. As you know, the Romulans are a bad guy, essentially, mm-hmm. throughout the series. Their species is essentially conniving and very sneaky and wants to overthrow the Federation. They never do. Ha! But
they're very shady.
Yeah.
You know, and they had the Tal Shiar, which is basically the Romulan Section 31. And you've seen them, they've always done their dangerous experiments. The Romulans are famous for just doing all these experiments, and who cares who dies?
Yep.
As long as we do so the Romulans have been very sneaky, suspicious, not necessarily evil. Their worldview was just different than the Federation's worldview.
And it was never all of them. It was like a 50-50 split. Mm-hmm. There was the evil side and the good side. So Picard's pissed off because the Federation doesn't end up wanting to help them as Romulus is going to explode. Because they know it. It's a supernova of their star.
Yeah.
And Spock fails in his timeline. Apparently, they lead you to believe they fail in this timeline as well. And that's why Picard retires. He's pissed off at the Federation.
And the Federation used the synthetic overthrow of and destruction of the Utopian shipyards on Mars as a reason why now we can't help the Romulans because this just happened.
Oh.
And Picard's like, that's BS. We still should help the Romulans.
Definitely
a message there because in the episode, they give you some exposition via an interview with Picard and they go, so all these years ago, this happened. And it was basically an ambush interview and Picard's getting pissed. And he's like, we should have helped them. All right, okay, get out of my house.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. So
that's the background of the story. And then the arc that we're following now is a human / probably android with data-like abilities who might be his daughter,
but
who needs help from Picard. Yeah.
Data's daughter?
A flesh-and-blood synthetic. They'll probably explain to us why she can be considered Data's daughter, but I like it because back in the original series, or I should say Next Gen, Data did try to make a daughter. Her name was Lol. She didn't live long.
Lol.
But he tried to reproduce in the way that he could. They believe that there is technology that has created to pass as Data tried to download himself into this B4 android that was a lesser android. It was the first version of him. That didn't work. But they figured out a way that maybe this guy, Dr. Maddox, and Joe and I didn't realize at the beginning that this is just not a random name. Dr. Bruce Maddox, who is... just took off and decided maybe to do his own thing once they banned synthetics. He's the dude that put Data on trial in season 1 in the Measure of a Man episode, which Picard fought heartily to say, Data is a man. He's a sentient being. And they're like, no, he's a robot. We're going to take him apart. And so Dr. Maddox, at the end of that episode, kind of turned around and said, hey, maybe Data's not so bad after all because he's his own guy. Turns out he's been doing a lot of research over the years, and including, I guess, maybe some forbidden research since synthetics have been banned.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, though, because if he's been doing all of that previously,
he
would still keep doing it.
I like it a lot. We've got some people, including my buddy David, who I play games with, and he works for the military. He hates everything. And he's like, I don't know what Star Trek they're watching, but, you know, Picard never cared about Data that much. And it's like, are you kidding me?
He really did.
He cared about Data as much as anybody. It's just Picard never, he's British. He doesn't care about anybody. Though, I mean, arguably, well, he's French.
Okay.
He's definitely got a British accent, which means he was raised probably with an English upbringing. And I like the episode a lot. Joey, you had some problems a little bit, but...
So they're doing the whole thing. It's the main actress who plays the half-android, half-human right now is actually a twin. So she's playing two different characters, as we find out towards the end of the episode. And they're not very well-defined right now. And CBS does this thing with their editing where a character is in a very dramatic scene and then will be immediately in another scene where they're the completely opposite, where they're very calm and... you know, cool. And I just get kind of taken away when that happens because, you know, this okay. chick essentially gets her boyfriend gets shot in front of her because she doesn't know she's a synthetic when the show starts out. And she's like very dramatic up with talking to Patrick Stewart's character and being like, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, blah, blah, blah. And then the next thing, she's just like totally fine. And you're like, eh, I don't know if that's really believable. So I don't really blame her so much. But that arc is just kind of hard to follow when you're like, she's supposed to be a regular human. Her boyfriend's been shot. She's being hunted by bounty hunters. She should be like freaking out in every scene, essentially, but she's not. And then later on, you kind of see, oh, she's playing two different characters. I bet the script was kind of hard. So hopefully later on, when more episodes come out, it'll be very defined and rigid where her character is.
And I went with, is this sort of like an emotion chip thing where Data was able to shut off his emotion chip and therefore wasn't freaking out like we saw? I forget which Star Trek movie where he got the chip. And then Picard basically said, Data, maybe you should shut off your emotion chip because he was tripping. And he goes, okay, shuts it off. And oh, I'm okay to go about business. I don't know if they were making a callback to that, but Joe, the editing didn't make that clear. That's for sure.
Yeah, but the ending thing essentially is that the Romulans are reconstructing a Borg spacecraft.
Yeah,
a Borg cube.
They got a Borg cube in their reclamation station because they got no planet.
Wow.
And they know, and they got new Romulan warbirds that look pretty awesome.
So that was the coolest part. I was dope. Let's just follow this storyline.
Because you know, the Romulans never do dangerous experimentation.
Oh yeah, sure. Why not?
They're never up to no good.
Yeah, that's
safe.
Actually, it kind of seems like they would be kind of simpatico with the Borg. I mean, the experiments, adding parts. You know, resistance is futile. One of us.
And they're not happy because, well, you know, their planet got blown up and Federation didn't help them after they promised they would. So the Romulans probably hate us.
Oh, I love it. So you guys are going to keep watching then,
heck
I assume.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was a great episode. The special effects, the technology, all of it. It was fun seeing Data again in dream sequences. And we know we're going to meet a cool crew of this vagabond ship he's going to get. It's going to be like, you know, he's got a ragtag crew, going to go across the galaxy, meet some people we know from back in the day, including Seven of Nine, who I hope really does become part of his crew because she rocks. It looks good.
Moving on from that, Doctor Who actually made history, BJ.
Yeah, Doctor Who, man, talk about being able to do stuff where you know, that you actually can keep a secret and not know what's going on. Now, it could be because I don't pay attention to the internets, but I've been watching the season, enjoyed the season. The biggest complaint last year was the fact that they had no iconic Who villains. They were all brand new people, along with a brand new Doctor. I didn't hate that. I thought, okay, let's get to know this vibe, this new cool thing. I didn't mind that at all. I figured, look, at some point they'll bring back some of the classics, and that's exactly what they've done in season two. We got to see the Master come back, and I love the actor playing the Master, and I can't wait to see more of that. We also got a revisit to Gallifrey, and Gallifrey has basically been destroyed by the Master, but he said he had good reason.
I'm sure.
Said that actually he and the Doctor have been lied to their entire lives by what Gallifrey is all about. That's a mystery. Captain Jack Harkness came back in this episode. John Barrowman, who is a beloved man in the world of Doctor Who, and you know, off screen, apparently he did not get along so well with Stephen Moffat, who was the producer for so many years and showrunner, and that's not a big secret. And everybody loved John Barrowman and Captain Jack, apparently, except Steve Moffat. So and he never showed up again. He showed up, and Chris Chibnall, thank you, sir, because I think Captain Jack is a great character. And it was funny how he did what he did. But the big surprise was that the episode had the Jadoon, who are space rhinos, who just go, fro-mo, cho-mo, cho. They're the greatest aliens
space
ever.
Space rhinos.
They're awesome. They're basically police for hire.
Okay.
And they are so one way. It's like, you know, they're to the point where somebody shoves one of the Jadoon, he goes, you have assaulted a police officer, and your crime is a penalty of death. And then he just shoots him. Execution been carried out. It's just like they go, okay, well, boom, boom, boom. We know what's happening. You're going to die.
Well, thanks.
And I just love the Jadoon. They are so awesome. And we first saw them with David Tennant's version of the Doctor. And so it's great to see them back. And the Jadoon are here because they're looking for a fugitive. And the entire episode, they make us believe that this one dude is the fugitive. And meanwhile, his wife is clueless. Like, I don't understand what's going on. And, you know, and one dude's keeping a dossier on this fugitive. And nobody's believing him. He's just a crazy guy. And finally, he reveals, yes, I'm a guy, but listen, get my wife out of here, blah, blah, blah. So eventually we start to realize that the wife also, there's something a little off about her. An actor by the name of Joe Martin, who does a great job with this. And so eventually she goes to a lighthouse. She's told, In case of it's like break glass and follow the light. And that's what she's told to do.
So kind of in case of emergency sort of thing.
So
she goes to the lighthouse
where she's raised, and she tells the story about her life and all of these different things. But the doctor's like, but there's just something off. I don't understand. And then the doctor goes, what's over there? It looks like a gravestone. She goes, oh, yeah, that's where my parents are buried. So the doctor goes over to the gravestone. Meanwhile, she sees this in case of whatever, break glass.
Mm-hmm.
So the woman's like, oh, I was told to do this. She breaks the glass. Meanwhile, doctor is using her sonic screwdriver to see who's in the graves. And she's like, there are no bodies in the graves. She's like, what the hell is this? I'm getting all these weird readings. And she's like, and there's no names on the gravestone. And then we see this woman get bathed in this golden light. We have seen this before on Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually because somebody's been through what's called a chameleon arch, which allows a Time Lord to have his body completely look like any alien species it wants, and it wipes the Time Lord's memory so they don't know who they are.
Oh.
It's a way to protect themselves if anybody ever comes hunting for them. You don't know who you are. Your body looks totally whatever like you want it to look like. We've seen it before in a great episode called Human Nature. It was a two-parter, which was originally based on a book that was written about Doctor Who. Fantastic Tennant episode. We've seen it with the Master. And now we're like, wait a second. Who the heck is this? Because we know it's a Time Lord thing.
Yeah.
And there's only one other Time Lord we've never seen from the old shows. And it's a Time Lord called the Rani. We've seen the Master. We've seen the Doctor. And we've never seen the Rani. So immediately I'm like, and of course the Rani was a woman, so we're like, is this the Rani? Are we going to see the Rani?
Yeah.
Well, then she comes out, the doctor's like, what the F do you got buried down there? But she's dressed in a completely cool looking weird outfit. It's like, it's an outfit.
I saw the pictures of the outfit.
Yeah,
it looks like, pretty sweet.
It's like, this is a weird, sweet way, and you're like, you know, the only people that wear outfits that are really freaky and weird like this are Time Lords. So it's like, all right, she's a Time Lord, and she just looks at Jodie Whittaker and says, don't worry, I know you're all messed up and everything, but I'll help you, my head's clear. Let me just start from the top. She says, hello, I'm the Doctor. And we're like, what?
Yeah. Wait.
We've seen that before. The governor, the actor who played the governor, he did that. But it was early. He just got hit on the head and thought he was the doctor, but he really was never the doctor. This woman then transports us to, as she digs it. Meanwhile, Jodie Whittaker's digging up this grave. And what do we see in the grave? The top of a sign that says police box. She's digging out a TARDIS. And meanwhile, that's when the new doctor comes by and goes, oh, yeah, let me take you. And so she's treating Jodie Whittaker like Jodie Whittaker is just a regular human being. And she goes, and so she's treating Jodie Whittaker like, hi, human, would you like to see something really cool? And so she goes, here, let me show you something really cool. Takes her into the TARDIS. Jodie Whittaker's like, what the A? The TARDIS inside looks very much like era of the first doctor, era of the second doctor, maybe the third doctor. It's old school inside.
Wow.
And Jodie Whittaker's like, hey, dude, I'm not just a regular human being. I am a Time Lord. I'm the Doctor. And then this woman says, well, you can't be the Doctor. I don't know you at all. Who the hell are you? And so Jodie goes, okay, well, that means then I'm after you. But that's impossible, because if I was after you, I would remember you. And I don't remember you either. Who are you? Jodie then analyzes her with a sonic screwdriver. And it's like, we're the same person. How is this possible?
And that was a big thing, too, because Chris Chibnall, the showrunner, has said out there that she is definitely the Doctor.
Yes, and it even said at the end of the episode, and introducing Joe Martin as the Doctor.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The lore of the Doctor is this. The Doctor gets 12 regenerations, and the 12th regeneration should have been actually Matt Smith. Like, that should have been the last one he had. But then they introduced the War Doctor, which was a doctor we never heard about, between Eccleston's Doctor and Tennant's Doctor. I should say between McGann's Doctor and Tennant's Doctor.
Yeah.
So we didn't know about this guy. That meant, okay, then actually Matt Smith is the last guy. Regenerations are gone. They come up with a reason to give him new regenerations
Capaldi. Sure. Well, yeah, why not?
But the idea is that who is this person? Because they ran out of regenerations, so she can't fit into... how are they going to explain this? That she, because that would have meant that David Tennant should have been the last Doctor with regenerations. So everyone's like tripping out. Like,
I can tell you, like, your brain's working trying to figure out what's going on with it.
She acts like she doesn't know what a sonic screwdriver is, which is about kind of like what an older Doctor. It wasn't like Patrick, the second Doctor, I think, created the screwdriver. The first Doctor knew nothing about a sonic screwdriver, so it's possible she fits in between one and two.
Whoa!
But she kind of doesn't know, you know, and plus. Her, her inside is so old, it's nothing like the TARDISes we've seen from the recent times. It's exciting. I can tell
how just stoked you are about this.
And here's the thing. I haven't mentioned what people said are historic about this because, frankly, I get it. Look, I'm a white privileged guy, and you know nobody likes to hear me say that it's not historic. But really, I'm a fan of Doctor Who. I'm more excited how she fits in, not that she's an African-American actress for the first time playing the role, because I didn't even notice that. What I noticed was like, what the F? Where do you fit in? Who are you? What is... And Joe Martin was brilliant. I tell you what I want to see. Mm. I want to see her as the Doctor sometime.
Yeah.
She was so amazing. Oh, my God. She knocked it out of the park. She was a great Doctor. The play between her and Jodie Whittaker was so fantastic. I loved it. And, yes, it's monumental because, she's an African-American woman playing this role. I think that, that's terrific for all the right reasons. But as a true fan, I didn't give a crap because I thought, these are two Doctors and I don't understand what's going on, and they're amazing.
That is awesome. I just love how stoked you are about it. Now we got to get on to
the Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
Vicky, what's going on with movies this week?
Not anything that we care about. Like, I really don't care about Taylor Swift. I really.
Oh, whoa. Yeah, I mean.
Tay-Tay's doing something? Wait a minute.
Taylor Swift, Miss America. I don't like Tay-Tay. Oh. You know, everyone has that one celebrity you have no reason to, like, dislike, but you do anyways. She's that person.
She's that one for you.
You're no Swifty.
I am not. I'm proud of it. There's only Gretel and Hansel, but nothing's even really said on that.
Oh, that's actually supposed to be a thing.
A horror movie. The only person on this that is somebody that we know is Alice Krieg.
Oh, Krieg, who played the Borg Queen back in the day and also was in the OA.
Yep. She was the adopted mother in the OA.
Yeah.
But basically, it's based on the Grimm fairy tales. So, I mean, if you like that kind of stuff, go for it. But I found this article on crack.com, and it's actually really interesting because you always wonder, how is it that these big movies can keep secrets? Like, when it comes to Star Wars or even Marvel, or even as something as simple as, like, right now here in Seattle, we're getting a hockey team, and we don't know what the name is. We have some leaks. But somebody knows out there. Someone has already made the shirts and everything. Well, that's what you were saying.
Well, or at the Doctor Who episode that we were just talking about. I mean, I had no idea that there was going to be a big Doctor reveal like there was. So you're right. I don't know how they get to keep stuff like that secret.
So apparently they do different things on different movie sets. Like, for example, to ensure nothing came out about Star Wars The Force Awakens, scripts were printed on dark red pages to prevent any photocopying.
Oh, wow. Okay, so using the technology to keep it under wraps.
Nice.
But, I mean, it's kind of funny, though, because in the last one, Rise of Skywalker, it was leaked that John Boyega, actually, the script that got out was his fault because it was under his bed, and then they moved, and somebody picked it up.
Oh!
Yeah, and so that whole thing came out back then. So, I mean,
sometimes technology doesn't help you.
Nope. But in Game of Thrones, I know they had a lot of issues, and that was one of the most, I think, spoiled shows.
Oh, like, gosh, yeah.
People least respected the spoiler-free zone with that show.
Yeah.
But the way directors were able to keep it all secret, because fans and paparazzi were so intent on getting season 8 spoilers that they found ways to bypass set security. The solution was to just give them fake shoots to spy on. So they would set up fake shoots for them to, like, spy on and then kind of go do their own thing.
Oh, that's so funny.
That's what you got
to
do.
Yeah, they had to set up a bunch of fake scenes.
Well, it was just like with The Walking Dead. People were going over there with drones just to see who would be at the casting calls.
Right.
And see, oh, well, this person's going to be here. Oh, this person's coming back. Maybe they're doing a flashback. They're doing this and that. And you're like, can we just watch this show, guys?
No, not anymore. We can't.
Oh, God, no.
So what did J.J. Abrams do to keep paparazzi away from Star Trek Into Darkness?
Ooh.
He built a giant wall. He barricaded the movie's outdoor set with 30 shipping containers.
That's funny.
It's interesting now that has to be a cost of making a movie, is keeping paparazzi out.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It really does, yeah.
All right, if you guys haven't seen Sherlock, spoiler alert.
Oh, okay.
The series.
He's a detective, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So the mystery at the end of Sherlock's second season finale, the big one, wasn't whether he survived, but how. So several decoy scenarios were filmed, and the star Benedict Cumberbatch even let slip a few details in a video for Comic-Con. In the end, some of the fake scenes were incorporated into the third season's opening episode as a dramatization in universe theories. But the show never really explained how he did it.
Oh. Yeah.
Wow.
So he just did a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
So that's how they kind of prevented that. Apparently, in Doctor Who,
yes,
as a security measure during the 2005 series of Doctor Who, the production team renamed preview tapes of the program Torchwood to trick any video pirates desperate to get their hands on a revival. So Torchwood is an anagram of Doctor Who.
And that's exactly what they ended up using, and when they created a whole new series and a whole new branch of, if you will, the
spinoff.
Yeah.
In 2006.
Isn't that crazy?
So apparently anti-air guns guarded the Game of Thrones set.
For drones.
Yeah, so the studio had people with drone killer guns watching the sky ready to shoot down any drones.
Wow. That sounds like a bad, like a GoBots version of the Starkiller base.
Yeah.
Watch out for the drone killer base.
Best part is you could tell me it was for the dragons.
Yeah, right. Got to keep the dragons at bay.
With tactical gear. Well, how about during the production of Twin Peaks back in 2017, the actors didn't even know what was going on with the pilot. So according to actor Harry Goez, it's Deputy Andy,
yep,
everyone only received a portion of their lines in the morning of the shoot, and immediately after filming wrapped, an assistant would feed their scripts to a shredder.
I got to tell you, though, with Twin Peaks, you could release all the scripts. Yes. Not know what's going on.
You can release the show and people still not know
David
what's going
Lynch
on.
Could explain exactly what he was trying to accomplish on each and every scene in like exquisite detail, and you would still be going, huh?
Completely confused, and you told me exactly what's happening, and I still don't get it.
The interesting thing, like I was thinking about when directors only give like portions of the script, because of that, that is how we ended up with Gandalf and Magneto.
Huh?
Because I believe I was reading an article that he was Ian McKellen was going to be in one of the Mission Impossible movies.
Oh, okay.
With Tom Cruise, but they only gave him a portion of the script. He didn't give him the whole script, and he's like, "Well, I don't want to do this. I don't know what the movie is really."
It doesn't make any sense.
He's like, so he passed on it, and then he went on to play Magneto and Gandalf.
Oh, nice.
Well, that worked out.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah, that one's pretty awesome. I mean, it's a good way to go about it on that, at least. I mean, you hear about people who say, oh, it was, my regret was not doing a certain movie or something. It's like the complete opposite of that is like, no, I got to be two massively iconic characters in gigantic franchises.
One with my best buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, until next time, guys, stay nerdy.
Your inner geek wants to come out and play, but where to go? Join Vernon Wells, the ultimate club where you and your fellow geeks can hang out, play games, and just nerd out 24/7. Whether you love RPGs, video games, or are just a major fan of sci-fi and geek culture, Vernon Wells has something for everyone. Let your geek flag fly at Vernon Wells. Sign up today and see for yourself. VNW.club. That's VNW.club.